Joni Mitchell, The River. This is the Taylor Report, CIOT 89.5 FM. There are a number of things. I want to make sure I mention that there's a couple of very important books. I've been using the word, I'll beat it up, I guess, chapbooks. But it's a concept of books that are issued to be in current with it, given the turbulent world we're in, some publishers will solicit books by authorities that are to the point and provide background and argumentation, which is vitally needed because events move fast. And there have been some great, over the years, examples of it. There was once a publisher in Kansas called Haldeman Julius, and they produced little green books. They were, I think, was the title of it. It might be, I hope I got the color right. It might have been gray books, but I think they were green. And they would, really important authors would just write essays on issues that they considered very important to the public, and then they would be issued, and they were paperback, and you could carry them in your pocket. It's a great tradition. But Baraka Books has published a couple of very timely books. One is by Yaakov Rabkin, Zionism Decoded in 101 Quotes. The book has been praised by Ian Papp, historian, author, 10 Myths About Israel. It's the whole story of the development of Israel and the twin story of the Palestinians. One twin disappeared, the other twin became famous. The whole project needs really scholarly work, and Yaakov Rabkin is one of the people most qualified to talk about this, and his book is Zionism Decoded, is Baraka Books, and I hope people will look for that. And the other is Rwanda's 30-year assault on Congo, the crimes, the criminals, and the cover-up. This is by Judy Reaver, who has written a couple of three books on the subject already. She herself was in the area at the time of the war and genocide and loss of life, massive loss of life, and where great powers interested themselves in securing the minerals and resources of the Great Lakes region. And it's never been properly told, that story, but Judy Reaver is one of the people who's latched on to key aspects of it. And one of them that, of course, is staying with us, as the title indicates, the Rwanda, the government of Rwanda, the RPF, which seized power in 1994, illegally, by the way, because they had an accord, a thing called the Arusha Accord. It was agreed to, an international agreement. It had the third-party signatories that were to see to it that the process of multi-partyism and democracy would be implemented. And because of the assassination of the president of one side, and the outbreak of violence, assault by the Rwanda Patriotic Front, a war developed. And when the dust settled, the Arusha Accord was in the garbage can. They did not permit a multi-party contest, but instead imposed a system where the majority of the people actually were not able to be part of the process. But more significantly, I should say in addition, more sinister, the Rwandan government, together with the government of Uganda, the army of Uganda, invaded Congo in 1996. And this led to all kinds of havoc and loss of life. The invaders went all the way to Kinshasa, and they installed a government that they liked. But that government, after a few months, realized they didn't want to take dictation from Kigali, from Rwanda. They said they didn't want the Rwandans there. And so the fighting broke out over that. And really, we've gone through a period, as he says, of 30 years of warfare, which warfare doesn't mean that people don't make money or that mining doesn't go on. And this watching Trump and following the logic, they really don't care if there's a government in place at all. If they can create chaos, whoever initiates the violence, if they can create chaos, they can go ahead and extract oil, they can extract minerals, they can exploit labor, and they don't need a government there. They'll make one up if they have to. But Judy Reaver's book explains how that is what happened in the case of Congo, and how the Congolese have been basically fighting to retain their sovereignty. Eastern Congo is under the occupation of Rwanda-sponsored, I shouldn't just say sponsored, they have their own soldiers there as well. This has become so blatant that even the State Department has acknowledged recently that this is the case, that the so-called M23, which is just an extension of the Rwandan army, has been there and extracting minerals all this time. That's a lot of money, by the way. Very ugly situation. I have to say that, you know, you always want to keep alive your some cynicism about these things. The fact that the State Department is acknowledging this and saying that Rwanda is guilty of being there and they ought to leave, they're not making them go, by the way, but they is that there's been some dealings with the Congolese government in order to having them under some duress in order to permit the U.S. to have contracts for U.S. companies to extract minerals, resources from East Congo in order to have their sovereignty recognized. I assume that they are getting, they have a very nice agreement, one that the U.S. will, U.S. companies, mining companies, we always talk about the minerals there are among the reasons we all have functioning cell phones is that the there's minerals extracted from mines in East Congo that are necessary for our so that we can all have mobile phones. I don't hear anybody say cell phones anymore. We're changing our language as we go. Anyway, the title is Rwanda's 30-Year Assault on Congo, Judy Reaver and Baraka Books. We're going to be talking, we hope, with Judy Reaver probably certainly in the near future. This is the Taylor Report at the CIUT 89.5 FM. And today's news, as you probably are hearing, by the way, I think people are becoming... We're developing a callus when the subject of Trump and his opinions. People hardly register anymore, but it's all quite dangerous, and it probably dangerous to our health that we do have a kind of a callus, that we only take everything Trump says with, as they say, with a grain of salt. But the danger is that... In fact, the U.S. has embarked on something that is no one can predict. They are sending U.S. Navy and Marine Corps are going towards the Gulf. And, people thought previously they had done this in the past. They sent warships, and usually something would be talked about. Some sort of negotiations would go on, but then the warships would withdraw. But they're not withdrawing, and they're coming with greater force. And what is being said today by the White House, the president, is should actually lead to a serious showdown of who everybody is. Because Trump is saying today that first of all, he says he wants the oil, just like he said with Venezuela. And by the way, he got it. He's definitely got the Venezuelan situation in hand, and he says he's going to take the oil quietly without anybody noticing. He did the same with Panama. Panama has now been basically secured by the U.S. It's no longer independent, and the American leadership basically opposed the allowing Panama to be independent, as Ronald Reagan famously said, after all, we stole it fair and square, and so they want to take it back, and they are taking it back. It's pretty much done deal. And a lot of these matters are not remarked on anymore. They just happen. But that's the reality. So today he's saying he's going to blow up. If he doesn't get what he wants, he'll blow up Iran's entire oil-producing capacity, and he'll also blow up I can't get the right name for it, but that... ability to produce water, drinkable water. They call them, I guess, saline treatment plants. He says he's going to blow them up if he doesn't get exactly what he wants. He also claims he's negotiating with the Islamic Republic, and that's not possible if you follow what he's been doing and the logic. If you murder their leaders, you can't be negotiating with them, because how do you make a deal with someone if you kill him? If you say, all right, you know, you do this and I will do the other thing, and then we will come to a resolution. And then you also say, I murder him. So you can't be, unless you're looking in the mirror, you're not negotiating with anybody. Because on the side of Iran, they have not... They say they have no agreements, but it's really very ugly stuff. The little Shah that was being celebrated in the streets of Toronto not so long ago, the little Shah, he showed up at a Republican convention or conference think tank over the weekend, and he said he thanks Trump for bombing his country, and he can't wait to make Iran great again. It wasn't great. That's why they had a revolution, one of the biggest revolutions in history. And it was a popular revolution. That is, it had actual roots. And they had a referendum and created the Islamic Republic. They're a sovereign country. So here we have Israel and the United States bombing a sovereign country, and negotiating twice, and each time bombing them while they're negotiating. So it's completely criminal, undemocratic, a violation of the Constitution of the United States. And it's just reaching proportions that I don't think people can predict where it will go, but Canada, and this will be put on Avi Lewis's agenda. Somebody ought to ask him. Canada says it'll be ready, should, I guess, the Marines be able to secure something that Canada would be ready, of course, to go in and open the Strait of Hormuz. It would be to totally violate the notion of sovereignty, and it would prove that Western colonialists have never changed their basic project to have hegemony over the world and to take, as Donald Trump says, people's oil, to take their country. So it's kind of important matter. On the weekend, I saw a story that I can't resist talking about in the last moments of the show. This says a liberal MP appears to question forced labor in China. Well, so do I. There isn't any real evidence there is forced labor in China. But because under the Harper organization, this became a favorite subject, and the liberals have joined in, though less enthusiasm, but they want to criminalize, try to always have something on China so as to disrupt the ability to have ordinary trade with China. And China is due, according to Carney's government, to export to Canada 48,000 electrical vehicles. Trump doesn't want that. He doesn't want any electric vehicles. And those who believe in the only auto companies in the world should be the big three, they don't want it. So they have this fairy tale. It is a fairy tale. The other countries in the world have gone to this area of China called Xinjiang, and they have inspected. And they are many. For example, the Islamic states, I think there are 55 of them, they visited. And here's how it works. Our media is so powerful that we all smirk if we say, but those are Arabs, or those are Muslims, or they're little countries, or et cetera. They're cynical people. But and by the way, Canadian travelers, British travelers, we've interviewed a professor on this show from, I forget which university, but he just happened to comment on this. He travels in the region. He knows the area. He said, no, it's all, not so. It's actually, Xinjiang is a stable area of China. It's a developing area. Population has grown more rapidly than other parts of China. And yet, we have people here who will just beat this subject as though they're the only ones who know anything about it. So anyway, they had a hearing in Ottawa on this issue of doing business with China, and they called an expert. So a liberal member of parliament was asked, and I love this because it's a naive question. He said, have you yourself ever seen this? Well, no. Well, how do you know? Well, you can't really dispute it because the Human Rights Watch in Washington says that there are slave labor in Xinjiang. That, this is something out of Gogol. It's a joke. There are experts that disagree. Did they call an expert that disagrees? No, they only called one expert, the one that doesn't like China. They don't call two experts. They don't. It's a clown show. It's absurd. And remember, Donald Trump's running the world now, and Human Rights Watch is one of the little pieces of the American power system. So it's a disgrace that happened. The poor devil who asked the question had to apologize. I think we are just about done, according to Pedro, and 33:45:78 is coming up with Steve Friedman. See ya.